Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
In the past, most of the people in this room voted for a wall, but the proper wall never got built. I will get it built.
Time and time again, there were references to things of the past, and if we're going to be able to work together, which we need to for the American people, we have to look to the future.
You know, as a woman member of Congress, there is a lot of things that we can work together in a bipartisan fashion to help not only women, but the entire country.
We're watching the House Ethics Committee very closely. We expect action. We believe that David Stringer has revealed himself to be unfit to serve in the Arizona legislature, and we think it should be removed.
The system is called vote by mail. We send it to you, you send it back. It's a popular system, I use it myself, but you need to mail it back. I can't think of anything more convenient than mailing back your ballot once you've received it.
And with us to talk about President Trump's State of the Union address, along with some news from the legislature and more, are Marcus Dell'Artino, partner at First Strategic, and former Tempe Mayor Neil Giuliano, now CEO at Greater Phoenix Leadership. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So, Marcus, yes, President Trump, State of the Union, was he reaching out or was he playing the same game?
I think he was reaching out. I mean, his tone was definitely different than we've heard in the past. And frankly, you know, I've said this privately, and so I'll go out on a limb. I think it was one of his best speeches of probably his lifetime, frankly. Now, he's not the best speech giver. Let's get that out. But I think it was one of his best performances, no doubt. I think he tried to strike some bipartisanship. I think there were some signs of it. You know, Kyrsten Sinema stood up at a certain part of that speech. Now, one of her Democratic members rumored to tell her to sit down. I think he probably struck the right chord, and he certainly struck the right chord for the Republicans. I think they had enough red meat during that speech to coalesce around him.
Well, and that was all. This is Neil. That was all that mattered for him. Let's be honest. That was a speech that played mostly to his base. I appreciated some of the outreach. The tone was nice. You know, a couple of times I woke up during the speech and I was just kind of curious what he was talking about right then. I heard him talking about HIV/AIDS. This is the guy who fired the entire AIDS Council, has not hired a White House Office of National AIDS Policy director. But it was curious. It was interesting.
Were those people really doing anything anyway?
Yes.
Are you okay? No,
yes. Is this small G government versus big G government?
Yeah.
But
yes,
Neil, briefly.
No.
So was the bipartisanship believable at any level, whether it's for infrastructure or anything else?
I think there are areas in which I think there will be bipartisan work moving forward. Whether it moves all the way forward to an actual bill that can be advanced, certainly Arizona would benefit tremendously if there's an infrastructure bill. I think that's really important. I hope they can make that happen.
You and me both.
But when it came to the border wall, then since we're a border state, let's pivot there. And since this is the focus of what may be another shutdown next week, do you see any bipartisanship there? Do you see Trump kind of holding this line?
I think we will know the bipartisanship is working right now. The sides are talking. I know the same reports everyone else is hearing, that it looks like they're getting close to having a deal. Whether the president accepts the deal or not is the other thing. You know,
right.
You have a challenge when you go out and you consult and you put this out to your legislators on both sides of the aisle. You have to be willing to accept what they come back to you with. And I'm not sure the president will accept what comes back to him. That's a big unknown.
Yeah, I'm not as optimistic, I think, as everybody else is, and maybe it's my cynical nature on special interest or going to find a reason to blow up the deal because that's how they make their money. And so so I've got a funny feeling that it may not pan out. But, you know, the irony is, of course, everybody knows what the solution is. We've known about it for 15 years, right? Okay, build the wall, but do comprehensive immigration reform at the same time, including DACA. But that's never going to happen because it doesn't work to the advantage of each individual party or the special interests.
So how much worse do the parties look, or maybe they don't, at this point? Like if Mitch McConnell thinks he has a deal with Chuck Schumer or someone else, and then they don't really know the wild card once they go to the White House, how disconcerting, how frustrating can that be?
epically frustrating.
Especially for the folks in government at this time. But I think what we have to remember is that we're in the phase after the midterms, and while people are already announcing for 2020 and so forth, for most of America, we're in the period where not many people are really paying attention. And you got to remember that. We pay attention. It's what we do. Obviously, the members of Congress and so forth, there's groups that pay attention. But most of America, not so much.
Do you think the shutdown cut through that, though, because it was so long? And
for a period of time.
Right.
Certainly for a period of time, it did.
So let's talk about the bipartisanship here, though. I want to, as you look at this, so much of what is interesting about the story around this is that it's so about the political win, right? Like, the Democrats are not going to give Trump a political win on this, and Trump is not going to accept anything but being able to say he won on the wall. Do you think this is what this is actually about, or do you think when those bipartisan debates are going on right now, they're going to come up with something more bipartisan, more comprehensive in terms of immigration reform?
Well, I think if there's any movement at all from the newly empowered Democrats in the House, they will want to get something done. Will it go as far as their Republican colleagues want or not is the big question, and we just don't know yet. I'm optimistic. I'm kind of optimistic that something will come forward. I'm not optimistic that it will go all the way, because I think the president is not going to be happy with the compromise that the Republicans have made on their behalf, on his behalf.
Now, gentlemen, someone who has been very critical of President Trump just made an announcement on another media outlet. We won't mention what that is. His name is Grant Woods. And after all the clamor, after the Senator McCain memorial service and getting back into the public eye, Marcus, Neil, I think you guys both called this Grant Woods not a Senate candidate in 2020. Marcus, let's talk about that a little bit.
Shocker. I don't think Grant had a path to victory, and I think that's pretty clear. And I should say I consider Grant a friend. I think he's a good person. But listen, I'm not too sure how you get through a Democratic primary after endorsing Jan Brewer. And there's a series of other things from, you know, whether you go to his radio show, whether you go to his political statements. You know, he's evolved certainly into the Democratic Party, but there is that past there, and working through that Democrat primary would have been difficult is an understatement.
Well, there's difficulty, Neil, but there's also the feeling of, was he going to be some sort of alternative? Was he someone that would have tried to be a problem solver and less partisan?
Oh, I think without a doubt, Grant Woods would have been a rather stellar and very strong senator representing Arizonans' core, what Arizona is all about. He has that running through his blood. You know, Marcus is right in terms of a path to victory. But I think more than that, and I haven't spoken with him since the announcement just a few minutes ago, obviously, but what we see now, the extremes of both parties, which are the bases, which you really need to begin and move a campaign forward, they want you to agree with them. They want you to be loud. They want you to be obnoxious on their behalf. And for the most part, if you're not, they don't have much time for you. And that's not Grant Woods. Grant Woods, in my view, and he's been a friend of mine for 30-some years, he is, excuse the word, elder, but, you know, he's an elder statesman at this point. He has traversed many different issues over in our state for many, many years, and I think getting down and dirty and realizing what you have to do to get elected to the U.S. Senate just at this point wasn't going to be what he wanted to do.
I would add to this, though. I'm not too sure his path to victory wouldn't have been running as an independent. Hmm. The issue with that, of course, is it's twice as much work.
Yeah, twice as much money.
Correct. And maybe twice is a little low. Maybe it's four times as much work. And remember, it's not like he really needs another job. He's doing pretty well in his private sector life.
Here's the thing, and not to leave Lauren out of this, because she doesn't fit into this position, which is good, Lauren. a male going through a midlife crisis, which I can certainly relate to.
Is
there a feeling that he just counted the, let's say I can go to Italy and teach classes for 6 weeks, I can do an album, I can write a play, I can sit in a nice estate and not worry about those things. Ultimately, do you have to want to get in the dirt and fight to do this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, for him, I think it'd be, look, I won't have as much time to play basketball. And he's right. You just won't. And you've got to be constantly raising money, and you got to be in the muck of it.
It is a little too bad, though, because he would have been a phenomenal senator for representing Arizona, political issues aside and so forth. He's just a decent, wonderful man who would have represented Arizona really well. Now you have to look at, okay, what's left in that Democratic primary? Is it Ruben Gallego? Is it Mark Kelly? Mm-hmm. Does Martha McSally end up having a challenger from in her party? All still a lot of unknowns, and as we move forward on this one.
You want to get into the unknowns at this point? Any predictions who we might see on the Democratic side first?
I think Mark Kelly will jump into it for sure. I think Congressman Gallego is considering it and wants to get into it. But, you know, look, the lesson was learned this last time. Republicans had a very ugly, messy primary, and it didn't work so well for the candidate trying to go from August to November. You flip that for 2020, will the Democrats do the same thing or not, or will they be a little smarter than the Republicans were last time? All to be determined.
Well, doesn't Ruben Gallego fit what Neil was talking about, Marcus, the idea that the parties want someone who's loud? Gallego's been very loud about President Trump, very critical. And Mark Kelly will have that, the Gabby Giffords connection, the fact that he is an American hero, but also the NRA will certainly aim their money at him, too.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I think that that's an interesting primary. I mean, Gallego versus Giffords, or sorry, Mark Kelly. But, you know, and the storyline with Mark Kelly's somewhat entertaining, right? Because we've heard that Martha McSally's a pilot. I don't know if you guys heard that. I've heard that. And he's going to say, well, I'm a pilot too, but I'm also an astronaut. So it's almost like a one-upsmanship kind of game.
But then put fighter in with pilot. And maybe that's up a little.
We could wonder the whole pilot thing to death.
Well, hopefully Elon Musk doesn't get into it. He's sent convertibles into space. So
But I think Ruben's done a great job on the left side, kind of coalescing the progressive side of the party.
And absolutely.
So I think that you're going to have a battle from sort of the middle of the Democratic Party, if there is a middle left, and the progressive side.
Well, guys, before the break, finally on this then. Does Ruben Gallego, does Mark Kelly, does Felicia Rodolini, do any of them breathe a sigh of relief that Grant Woods isn't running?
I think it clears up, it just makes the decision making easier for others. It clears up potential money for others. Look, it's math, money, and message. It clears up the message a little bit. Nobody has to sort of stay in the middle without Grant in the race in a primary because Grant would have been in the middle. I think there'll be some interesting calculations as a result of Grant not being the race.
Yeah, if you're running a campaign, you want to get rid of your unknowns, right? And so you get rid of your unknown by Grant getting out of the race. And to Neil's point, it brings, you know, more money and more focus and more messaging and a time advantage to your candidate who's a Democrat coming out of that primary.
That's Marcus Dellartino. Also here is Neil Giuliano in Phoenix with Lauren Gilger. I'm Steve Goldstein. This is the Friday Newscap, which continues after this. Good morning. This is the Friday Newscap on 91.5 KJZZ in Phoenix with Lauren Gilger. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests today are Marcus Dellartino, partner at First Strategic, and former Tempe Mayor Neil Giuliano, now CEO at Greater Phoenix Leadership. So, Neil, let's talk about what's going on at the legislature, the attempt to clean up PEVL, which was fun to say a couple of times earlier this morning, the permanent early voting list, and also just the idea of voting by mail, changing that. Senator Michelle Ujanti-Rita is pushing for some changes. Some folks didn't react real well to it, but there is still a lot of Republican support. What do you make of it?
Well, I still go back. I'm curious as to what the constituency was for this proposed legislation. I don't think any of it is going to get anywhere. It seems pretty obvious at this point. There's at least some Republicans who are not going to be supportive. But look, this is a time in our culture and in our politics we should be doing everything we can to encourage and make it easier for people to participate in our democracy. These voter suppression ideas that are out there that come from all over the place, and we see them all over the country, are not the way to govern. And so, of course, it takes a while for those votes that are dropped off to be counted. It's the same as it's always been. The difference this time is we had some really close elections, so we were all still paying attention. Most of the time, we've forgotten about the election 2 days later, and we're not waiting to see what those other 30,000 votes, how those people voted, because it didn't matter. The election was really already won. So that's really the only distinction. And these aren't going anywhere. What do you think, Marcus? I'm just watching you here.
No, I don't think the bills have a chance. The everybody sort of forgets that although the Republicans have a two-seat advantage in the Senate, there's only a one-seat advantage in the House, and much more delicate. And I don't think that this bill ultimately would have had the votes to pass. But there is a danger here that I think gets often overlooked here, and is if you flirt too much with election law, Department of Justice likes to swoop in and start monitoring your elections. We in Arizona just got dismissed from that oversight that had been going on for as long as I can remember. It's been quite some time. And so we just got, under the Obama administration, ironically, but released from that oversight. If we go down this path, we will be back under Department of Justice oversight, and I will tell you that that is just not somewhere we want to be.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And as you talk about the balance in the Senate, so much of this is about two senators, right? Those middle-of-the-road Republicans, Kate Brophy McGee and Heather Carter. Let's talk a little bit about their role and sort of the ways in which, if they go one way or the other, they're controlling a lot of this debate. What do you make of this, Neil?
Oh, I think they have a wonderful opportunity for leadership. To really be the conscience, to be the arbiters, to be the thought leaders on a lot of these divisive issues that otherwise might go to one extreme or another. It's a role that both of them are very capable of performing. And as this session is starting out, they're unfortunately having to play that role quickly. And I'm sure on other issues they will as well.
Yeah, and both of them represent more moderate districts.
Sure.
And so that is playing into the overall Senate dynamics.
Yeah. Bigger picture on this, too, playing off what Lauren just said. I wonder if we're going to look for this kind of thing. Are we more likely, I guess it depends on the issue, Marcus, do you think we're more likely to see a couple of D's sort of cement Republicans on certain issues, or more likely to see Republicans end up moving to Democrats? I'm sort of thinking more in terms of budget, because we saw so much when it came to Red for Ed, K-12 funding, that kind of thing.
You know,
it's probably too early to tell, but I'm curious, too.
It's an interesting dynamic occurring. You know, certainly the Democrats are elated with Governor Ducey right now over tax conformity. Mm-hmm. And I know for a fact that the governor's reached out to a lot of Democrats on budget issues. So there is a dynamic there at play. But at the end of the day, I think it comes down to certain issues. You know, where they're going to be built, both of them are going to be building coalitions that coalesce around the issue, not so much around party or personalities.
Mm-hmm. And this is good for the process. People actually have to talk to each other. And you have to engage with people of the other party who might have a slightly or somewhat more than slightly different view on things. That is, I think, what we should be wanting and expecting from our legislators. So I'm happy to see it happen.
How different is that than it has been in the past? I mean, we've talked a lot about the closer split in the House and how it's a little bit closer in the Senate now. But, I mean, is this really making a much bigger impact than even we thought it might?
Well, I can tell you there have been past sessions when Democrats would go the entire session without being consulted by the majority, you know, just because you don't have to consult with the minority party. And so I think that's a positive that there's actually conversations taking place.
And I also think that it's part of the personality of the leadership of both those chambers right now.
Yeah.
Rusty Bowers and Karen Fan, both are very patient people, thoughtful on policy and personalities. And Bowers has made it quite clear that, you know, he wants to, the institution comes first. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to sort of reach out across the aisle. And that's just who Rusty's entire career, I think, has been.
So how much patience are we going to see with Representative David Stringer? Are we going to see, as bigger issues take hold, are we going to hear less and less about them? We're going to let this ethics investigation play out. Marcus, how much would Republicans love to see David Stringer commit a little harry-carry and just quit, and then they could put another conservative Republican in there?
Well, that's certainly the preferred solution, I think, for the Republicans, because to my point, the margins, it's a one-seat margin. So, you know, causes them quite a headache up there. Even a recall election causes them a headache. Let's just say, for argument's sake, it's a very strong Republican district. People need to know that. But in a recall election, you have 10 Republicans run and one Democrat. That could present quite a problem. The ethics investigation, as I understand, is going to be somewhat quick. I think we're expecting something shortly here. I contend that this really comes down to the State Bar of Arizona, and I'm sure they'd be thrilled to hear me say that. But if they conclude their investigation that somehow during his application that he wasn't truthful on that, then I think he's got a real problem. If he was truthful on that, it's an interesting case. You need to remember this goes back to 83. There are accusations. I'm not too sure, but we're not ever going to be able to know the totality of what those are. Didn't happen in the state of Arizona. Didn't happen when he was a legislator. So we are going to start walking this very odd line in Arizona. What is enough to throw a member out? And it's going to be a gut wrencher, I will tell you.
Well, because Neil, as uncomfortable as it is to have someone who's blatantly seems like a racist, First Amendment allows him to say that. Voters put him back in. As Marcus is talking about, these other things in Maryland take it to a much higher level.
I think the voices in his district will ultimately decide this. Looking, the gentleman's been elected a couple of times from up there. He's well known in that part of the state. And it's those voices from that are close to him and within that his constituency, particularly Republican constituency within his district, are the ones that will address this most forthright.
Mm-hmm. As we wrap up, David Stringer survives the session or no?
Oh, God, that is such a tough one. I don't I go back and forth on that one. I really do. I think that at some point, the body gets exhausted with dealing with the problem, right? And so I tell, you know, if you see the same elected official on TV every day, you get exhausted with seeing that, and that plays into voters' habits too. So I'm just not too sure. If he does survive the session, ultimately, I think the voters, where I contend this issue belongs, the issue belongs back with his voters, not in a body of 60 of his colleagues. It belongs with the people who elected him. Therefore, they should be doing a recall election.
Yeah, I would add to that, depending upon the outcome of the investigations, his peers will have the choice of really two paths. They can sort of go back to the norm. I don't think that's going to happen. Or they can isolate and ignore, which is, I think, what will happen. And then his district will deal with it.
Neil Giuliano of Greater Phoenix Leadership, Marcus Dellartino of First Strategic. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.